Hello and welcome to the Careless Whisper podcast. I'm Jacob Birch. With me is George Mud. Oh, sorry. Eric. Eric Steven. How's it going?
I'm certainly never going to dance again.
Sorry. Thank you to my brother, Gabriel, for recording that new version of the intro. This week only, I came up with the idea after I thought the big news of the week would be this trade the Dodgers made with the A's.
I mean, in many ways, it kind of
it's the most substantial. It's arguably the most substantial news, but it's not what we got a lot of questions about.
I would say the biggest news this week is pretty much surrounding the Dodgers right fielder.
Yeah, that is a great way to put it. We're gonna talk. You want to go over just the details of the Yasiel Puig thing, and then we're gonna get our opinions on it a little bit later. As you might guess, most of our Twitter questions were about Yasiel Puig, so we're going to kind of let that weigh in, and we'll get to those pretty quick. But you want to kind of sum up?
Yeah, we expected this week to be like a trade deadline recap. We set, we were recording even a little bit later than usual
to make sure we had all the details. You know,
yeah, and so like now it's, but it became so much more than that. So the Dodgers, they made three trades Monday. They got a couple relievers in two of the trades. The big trade was with the A's. They got Rich Hill, who's arguably the best pitcher in the American League, when healthy. The caveat for seemingly all Dodger pitchers, if not all players.
His walk-up son should be a Hall & Oates son, right?
Wow.
You're like, Rich Hill.
Oh, no, well, they have Rich Girl.
Yeah, that's so, what I'm saying.
So, like, if you
you're
if
a
you,
Rich like, Hill.
Yeah, like, if you just muted a little bit like that, or like you could
or make an excellent Oregon version of it.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, sorry for distracting you.
No,
I thought of that and it was too good to pass up.
You have that was a great interjection. I loved it. So then they also got Josh Reddick in the deal. Very good defensive player. Roughly as close to like an Andre Ethier type as you can get without having Andre Ethier. Maybe a little different. He's better, I would say, better defensively than Andre Ethier, but also guy who crushes right-handed pitching, not so much against lefties. You know,
is he? I actually haven't looked up his. I've seen his right-handed splits most of this week because it was a big selling point. What are his left-handed splits? Is he bad or average?
No. Pretty bad.
Okay.
Well, on the bad side, it's not like, you know,
on the south side of average.
Yeah. Well, but so like this year, I know for certain I don't have it in front of me, but he has no extra base hits in 71 plate appearances against lefties. So that's one thing. But like they're facing a lefty tonight. We haven't seen the lineup yet. If I had to guess, he's probably playing tonight still. But that's, you know, because they like his defense, et cetera, et cetera. But
they just start Yasiel Puig instead?
Well, see, the problem with that is you have to be on the active roster.
What?
And I mean, look, here's the deal with this. So the move is on Tuesday. Part of the way to clear space on the active roster for Reddick, and then also Jesse Chavez, who's the reliever. Rich Hill will be activated whenever he's ready to start, which could be later in the week because he's on the DL right now. The Dodgers set a record, by the way, for nationally record for players on the DL. It's 23 and counting right now.
Boston holds the major league record, right?
Yeah, 27. So we're coming for you, Red Sox. but the important caveat about that is the 2012 Red Sox, that was the chicken and beer Bobby Valentine team.
Delicious.
And chicken beer's awesome. Right? And so the team that was so bad that they wanted to get rid of all their high-priced players, so they dumped Carl Crawford and Josh Beckett on the Dodgers so they can get Adrian Gonzalez.
The lesson is don't get rid of Carl Crawford.
The Punto trade, yeah. So, but anyways, that team lost 93 games and was in last place. And this year's team, Dodgers team, who's has the NL record, they're two games out of first place, and they're leading the wild card. So, it's pretty remarkable. This Dodgers season has been pretty remarkable in many respects.
And you can chalk a lot of that to the front office and they're really wanting to combine both depth and being able to take flyers on injury-prone players, right? They kind of combine those two. If you have depth, you're able to do that.
And then, too, like, you look at it, like, the part of it was a timing thing they knew going in. You know, Brandon McCarthy's recovering from surgery. Hyunjin Ryu's recovering from surgery. So it's a numbers game. You probably expect one of those guys to be sort of healthy down the stretch. And so far, that's the case. And, you know, McCarthy, I would argue, he had a bad game last night. But, like, if before they got Rich Hill, you know, he's in the conversation for, like, number two guy behind Kershaw, assuming Kershaw's healthy, you know, as they go forward. That's something we could figure out in the next couple months. But, yeah, so they have a lot of injury-prone guys. But anyway, Yasiel Puig sent to the minors, and there was such an uproar over this, and, like, we can get into it, but basically...
We get to the Ken Rosenthal thing,
what's
interesting to me, and I can't for life for me forget who it was, so I apologize to whoever tweeted this, but someone to me tweeted, you know, someone tweeted a Twitter account and said, hey, what's the corresponding move going to be? And he basically said, I can't say. I know what it is, but I can't say. And I thought, that's strange. What could it be? What could you not comment on? And then the Ken Rosenthal tweet came out, and the article came out, and I was like, oh. Uh-oh.
Yeah. So it's weird. I mean, and also, like, a lot of the uproar, it's such a... And Puig, in many ways, has been really divisive over the... You know, there's a lot of people... like anti-Puig, there's a lot of people staunchly pro-Puig.
So when you have someone like Ken Rosenthal tweeting that he stormed out, told that he was going to get sent down and then stormed out, which was later retracted.
That didn't help. Like, I think Ken, who is like
retracted,
probably the most respected like national reporter
absolutely.
In baseball
for,
there
for
is.
For good reason.
And he got, I think he got bad info from a source on that, and he kind of, and it made him look terrible, and he profusely apologized for it.
And had a very funny Twitter conversation with Yasiel Puig.
Yeah, right. And so, but I think the main thing with this is like the main sort of uproar over Dodgers, a lot of Dodgers fans, some with blinders on, some with rational opinions, is that how can you send Puig down? Like, why don't they send Van Slyke down? Why is Toll still here? Obviously, it's not a pure baseball decision. It is baseball related in many ways.
Puig was hitting really well after coming back from the DL, but he still missed a week, and that's still only like about a month of sample size.
I recommend reading Andy McCullough's sort of explainer or about the decision to send him down today in the LA Times in Wednesday's edition. Very good, very thorough. Essentially, what it boils down to is, you know, Puig, while there might not be, like, one single incident or sort of blow-up situation, the fact is there's just numerous little things, and basically he's, you know, Dave Roberts said... Essentially, the coaching staff and him had to devote more of their time to sort of Yasiel Puig, like keeping him in line is the wrong way to put it, but they had to devote more of their time to him than any other player. And he said, at this level, we're professionals. Ideally, it's as close to equal time as possible. So like Puig's got to live up to that on his end. There's conditioning issues with, you know, he's had four different hamstring injuries in 2 years. There's putting in extra work, like he famously said earlier this year, I think to Bill Plunkett. I think other reporters were there, I'm not sure, but basically he asked if he looked at video. He's like, no, I play baseball, and I don't like look at video or something. Like, just very flippant response to it, you know. You can make the argument Puig should definitely stay around from a baseball, like he's better, like he's still better, you know, than like some of the players they kept. But I think also is it's not just being better. It's like they're trying to – Puig has a certain talent level that's higher than a lot of folks, right, at like a maximum performance. And so I think this move, at the very least, if he does remain a Dodger, they're trying to maximize that. So going forward. So like, this is either, you call it what you want. It's a slap in the face. It's the cold water thrown to the face. A lot of things to the face, basically. it's a way to, like a wake-up call for Puig, or, and if he doesn't handle it well, it's his way out, you know? Like, they want to get the most out of him long-term, but he has to be, like, a willing participant in that, an active participant in that. And this is sort of a way to get that started while also not being a distraction is probably the best way to put it, I guess, at the team. So his future, we're going to take questions. I mean, we have questions on this. It's as up in the air as I've ever seen it. So we don't really know how this plays out, but there's a lot of scenarios, and a lot depends on what he does with Oklahoma City, with whom he'll play probably by the weekend.
And I think if you've been in a office situation with, you know, more than a dozen people, I have a hard time not imagining most people running into a situation like this. Someone you like, someone you root for, someone whose skill level you can tell is very high, but for one reason or another, fair or unfair, it just doesn't jives well with the rest of the team, requires more time from management. And then you can argue whether or not, well, you just put up with that or not. I think there's different managerial philosophies, regardless if it's in sports or not. But clearly the Dodgers have picked this, and clearly we don't have the full story. So it's kind of hard to pass too strong of a judgment. I know I'm sad because, you know, Puig is certainly fun to watch. And certainly, you know, his Little League home run is still probably the play of the year for me so far. So it taints that a little bit. Just, you know, you can't remember that with joy without thinking of the kind of what's going on right now. But,
well, yeah, like I grew up, Pedro Guerrero was probably my first favorite Dodger. Probably started watching them full time in like 1985 or so. And, that was the year he hit 15 home runs in June, and then he also hit like 460 in July. He led the National League. I didn't know anything about this in 1985, but he led the National League in on-base percentage and slugging percentage, and subsequently OPS. He hit 33 home runs, and Willie McGee somehow won the MVP over him. I still contend to this day that should have been Guerrero's MVP. If you look back at it, honestly, it probably should have been Dwight Gooden's, but but still. Like, Willie McGee, sorry to go off on a tangent, but so Willie McGee cost like two of my favorite Dodgers things. So the 85 MVP, which I think Guerrero should have won, and then also the 1990 National League batting title. Willie McGee was hitting 335 with the Giants, I think, or I forget if he was still on the Cardinals then. But he got traded to the A's sometime in August. But he already had enough plate appearances to qualify in the National League. And you know how the stats work if you switch leagues, like they just don't count.
Yeah.
So like, and so for the year he hit something like 324 because he slumped a little bit going down the stretch. Eddie Murray, George Brett won the American League batting title hitting like 329, which is amazing for him because it was his third batting title and also like technically in three different decades, so he's the only guy to do that. But Eddie Murray ends up having like a career year. He hit 330. He led the majors in batting average, no batting title, because Willie McGee once again stole a rightful award from a Dodger. So I'm very angry about that in retrospect. I was angry at the time, still angry about it now. But anyway, yeah, so like Pedro Guerrero in 88 he was seen as like a malcontent, and then like he would play up his injuries. That was the thought on him, and he had a very ugly exit. He's arguably, you can make a case like the best hitters in like LA Dodger history are like, it's either like Piazza, Pedro Guerrero, like Reggie Smith, maybe Gary Sheffield. It's like those. That's it. Pretty like. Basically. And so, and like for him to like have as bad of an exit as he had, I mean, ultimately, like, that 88 season was weird because so they traded Guerrero in August, but they got John Tudor. So, like, John Tudor was leading the league in ERA at the time. Like, that was a huge trade. Like, Pedro Guerrero was battling injuries in 88. But, like, how often do you see that where the ERA leader gets traded? That's a very odd move. Yeah. And then also Tudor didn't do much for the Dodgers, too, which made it even weirder. But anyway, so that was a hard breakup. So I understand where you're coming from with Puig. But yeah, I mean it's weird. And then also too the way with the Rosenthal story, that definitely added fuel to the fire. But the fact, so the news broke right when we were all on a conference call with Farhan Zaidi about like the deadline moves, and it got asked multiple times. You know, do you have any comment? And he's like, no, I don't want to comment. I don't have any comment. Like, I think the Dodgers had an opportunity to sort of get out in front. I think they handled it behind the scenes was great. In that, look, they told Puig ahead of time, we're going to try to trade you, and if we don't, we're not able to trade you, and we get who we think we're getting, which was Reddick. We're going to send you to the minors. Like, so they let them know that, like, this front office, they're big on communication with, not necessarily with the media, but with the players. Like, they let people know where they stand, right? So they're good about that, and I think that's a very professional approach. They said, look, we're flying to Colorado on Monday. Don't come. So it's not a distraction. Like, they knew, his agent Puig knew where he stood. Obviously. It's a shock, I'm sure. Like, he didn't take it well, but the fact that they told him ahead of time, they treated him like a professional, that's completely fine. But then once the sort of story broke, like, they had a chance to get out ahead of that story and comment more, you know, instead of letting it twist in the wind and like let more speculation run rampant, because they didn't really address it until Tuesday in Colorado.
Like, yeah, and Tuesday afternoon.
And it was like, yeah, so by then, like, you have, like, probably two news cycles worth of iterations of the...
Hot takes.
Exactly. So, like, I think they could have done a better job about handling that aspect of it. But, it's a very odd situation. But like you mentioned, it is kind of sad, too. Like, if you, like, his star, like, shone brighter than most, like, in recent memory. And if he's not able to ever get that again, that's sort of a sad thing that they weren't able to sort of, you know, keep that, at least close to as it was. But also, too, like, you know, mentioned, like, you know, if you want to make a statement with a guy, like you mentioned, you put up with a lot for a certain amount of production or whatever, it's easier to make a statement with a guy with the 706 OPS as it is to like an 850 or whatever. So I mean that's certainly part of it as well.
Right. And I think we don't know enough, like I said, to where I think anyone can have a valid opinion, not a valid, a strong opinion one way or the other. I think I can see defenses for either. Oh, this is a good idea or this is a bad idea, depending on what we do know. But I don't think anyone can question that this was handled very poorly from a PR perspective. And that is certainly a very easy and valid criticism to make.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, do you want to cheer up with some trivia? Dodgers are going to play the Rockies right now. They're going to play the Red Sox later in this week. I guess I can mention that.
Yeah, as far as we know, the schedule will not get changed. Although in a weird way, like, so yesterday, I think the Red Sox, they're in Seattle, and they mentioned that David Ortiz would not play first base in any of the games this weekend, so he's only going to be a pinch hitter. And their first baseman right now is Hanley Ramirez. And then, like, after the game, Hanley tripped down, going down the steps from the dugout.
Neither of them wants to start in Dodger Stadium.
So it's like, you know, like Vince Scully always says, if you want to make God smile, tell him your plans. So, like, you know, who knows what's going to happen this weekend? But we assume they're playing the Red Sox. We actually, as of we're talking, we have Scott Kazmir probably going to start Friday. After that, no idea. Like, Bud Norris could start Saturday. He could go on the DL today to make room for Brock Stewart, who's starting. Rich Hill might need a minor league start before he's ready, so he might not start this weekend. So who, like, there's a lot of possibilities for starters this weekend that might not be who we think they are. So
that's exciting.
Yay.
So that's yeah. Normally we spend a little bit more time on the upcoming week, but a lot of stuff happened in the last 72 hours we should go over. But first, trivia.
Nice.
Let's cheer ourselves up. I was in New York this weekend. I saw Mike Piazza's 31 get retired by the Mets.
Oh, yeah. How was that?
It was great. A very well-ran ceremony. It was raining really hard up to and even a little bit during the ceremony. And I was very prepared for them to do the ceremony and then say the game was canceled. But it stopped just enough to go. Kind of kept going off and on, but never hard enough to stop the game. Mets got destroyed by the Rockies.
Was that the game that Carlos Gonzalez hit like a late 3-run homer?
No.
Okay. Well, that was a rough weekend for the Mets because I'm thinking of a different game they got destroyed.
This was a game where, I forgot who it was. A Mets batter, and I do forget who it was, mm-hmm. hit what looked like a home run, and then they reviewed it and ruled it fan interference. I think the first time I've ever seen a called home run reverse, but I think the first time I've seen a fan interference on a home run ball get called into an out.
Oh.
Because Charlie...
It went out.
Yeah, it was like at the corner of the wall, and a fan leaped up and pulled it from it. And Blackman probably had a shot at it. It would have been a really tough catch, but he had a shot, and the fan just swiped it.
The one thing I did see, I didn't really see the ceremony so much, but I saw some pictures of the patch that the Mets wore on
the
sleeve.
Which was great. It was everywhere in the stadium, too.
It had full-on mustache. Yep. So that looked pretty sweet. So
it was sweet. And Citi Field, I give it an A. Great, great stadium. I really enjoyed it. Excellent hot dog toppings.
Oh yeah, good variety. You mentioned that. What can you elaborate a little bit?
Like it was like I don't even know what to call them, but I'm sure there's a name for this, and I don't know it. But it was like onions in a tomato sauce.
Stewed
maybe? What?
Wait. Okay. So like you put it on with a spoon or something? Or
yeah.
Wow.
I'm looking. I'll look this up because I'm sure there's a name for it, and I'm sure people are screaming at their radios. I'm going to pretend this is a radio.
I listen to podcasts on the radio.
Their default mustard was a nice ground deli mustard.
Okay.
Really fresh onions, jalapenos readily available. Just a very good.
That's pretty good.
I'm being told that it's called. I'm gonna keep Googling until I figure out. I have an idea of what it's called, but I'll confirm that.
I have a weird relationship with mustard. Not to sidetrack even more, but I grew up like yellow mustard only, kind of, and like was that way for a long time. I still really like yellow mustard, but like yeah, if you can get a good, like a sort of a grainy mustard. Yeah, or like, especially now, I've sort of developed more of an appreciation for horseradish.
Mm-hmm.
So like some sort of a horseradishy mustard, something that'll clear out your sinuses, as my dad used to say.
Philippe, the original mustard is the best at this.
That's excellent.
Just so, a little dab of, like when I'm making a salad, I'll put just a little, like literally less than half a teaspoon of that in my dressing, and it just gives it that nice little kick.
All you have to do is open the bottle, and you're like,
"Oh, look at that! Cure for the common cold."
Exactly. So, no, it's excellent. So
I'm told it is hot dog onion sauce.
I
feel better that it doesn't have a real name. Food.com is saying that it's specific to New York cart hot dogs, but that it's just called a red onion sauce.
Huh.
I'm glad because I looked at him like I know what that is. It's tomato sauce and onions, and then the onions are cooked. But I don't have a name for it. So
now,
it was delicious.
Is food.com part of the links sidebar on internet.com or where is that?
Food.com is food.com. I think food network owns food.com.
Really?
Oh, I think so.
Well, I stand correct because he's like weather.com is Weather Channel, so I guess it makes sense.
Yeah. Anyways,
my apologies.
So, New York, I came up with a really sweet trivia segment while I was in New York, and then got too tired, went and didn't sleep well enough, and I've forgotten it. Luckily, our friend Craig has sent two trivia questions to save me. So.
So a little behind the curtain here, Craig usually sends both of us the email, like with this, you know, series of questions. A lot of times there's food involved, and but this week, like the subject was in all head and all caps, for Jacob's eyes only. Like so, there's trivia involved.
We were talking trash, by the way, man.
Yeah, I'm sure. So I have not seen this email other than the subject. So go ahead.
Four questions, two are trivia. Which National League franchise has the largest difference between their top two all-time leaders in total bases?
Oh, wow. Wait, is it just a single answer, or do you say two? Which two?
Which National League franchise?
Oh, okay.
He gives you a hint. Both are in the Hall of Fame.
Really? Okay. So the Dodgers Duke Snyder has the home runs, but then you also have like Gil Hodges is up there, but then like Zach Weed is also a Hall of Famer. But I'm not sure if he played long enough to lead in total bases. I don't know who the total base leader is, which is stupid. So I'm not saying it's Dodger. I'm just talking myself through this.
Yep.
The Phillies, I would imagine Mike Schmidt has to lead them in total bases. They've been around forever and were terrible.
Zach Wheat has the total base record.
Okay, good. I feel bad because that's what I thought. But Richie Ashburn was very good, but also maybe more, I mean, he got a lot of credit for his defense, so maybe his offensive total wasn't there. My initial guess is the Phillies.
It is not the Phillies.
Duh.
It is a National League West franchise.
West, okay. So it's Tony Gwynn and Dave Winfield then.
There you go.
Yeah.
Tony Gwynn has 4,259. Yeah. Dave Winfield has 1,853.
Damn.
Yeah.
Wow.
So the difference of 2,603.
So what?
Jeez. Jeez, Tony Gwynn. Let someone else have some fun. Jeez.
He probably had like 1,800 in the three seasons he was in San Diego. I'm exaggerating slightly.
Tony Gwynn is up there for players I wish I had gotten into baseball just a little earlier. I saw him play, but yeah. When I was watching baseball when he was playing, I didn't really have that appreciation of who he was until his last two seasons. So
he was so good. I really appreciated older, like bigger Tony Gwynn. And like he had some really good late years. Like 97, he was just ridiculous.
There was a segment, and it would have been in the late 90s or early aughts, where they were talking about his ability to put the ball where he wanted it to.
Exactly.
And just how he could hit, like, you know, the proverbial tin can in the outfield kind of thing. And it's just like, and at the time, you know, that was one of the first in-between game segments I remember about baseball when I actually started paying attention to baseball. So when they said that, I'm like, oh, that's a thing people can do. That's how hitting works. And then I'm like, oh no, he's like the only one that can do that.
Early Tony Gwynn though was so good too. Like he always had the good arm in right field, but also he stole bases like in the first half of his career, and still he could drive the ball, you know, to all fields. But he had the infamous 5.5 hole in between the shortstop and third baseman. He could go there at will. He was like the first guy who was like famous for watching video. And this is the old day. Like it's so archaic. I mean, and like labor intensive compared to how easy it is now. He would literally like have to film himself like, and then watch a VHS tape of it later, you know, to get to break down his swing. But at the same time, while he was that technical, I remember him telling it, like, you know, the old adage, you know, you try to steal signs and get as whatever advantage you can. He did not want to know what pitch was coming, because he was so good at, like, hitting and batting that, like, he was better just reacting to what he saw than thinking more about it. So, like, it was just amazing. No, he was so good. And, like, you could tell, like, anytime Vin Scully talks about him, how much he really enjoyed him. So he was great. Loved him.
The next question from Craig, and this is my kind of question. I love this. Which offensive statistic do four LA Dodgers sit atop of the franchise all-time list? And name the four Dodgers. So name the category, name the Dodgers.
Is it an obscure thing, or okay? So four LA Dodgers atop the franchise list. So Zach Wheat has counting stuff a lot. Duke Snyder has home runs. So he played in LA. Is this a technical thing?
No.
Okay.
These are all.
Okay. Yeah. Oh man. So I would guess. Wow. So let's go. So on base percentage?
No. And I'm looking. Excuse me. Although, to be fair, I'm having a hard time finding on-base percentage. I have a giant list, and it has, like, everything except that.
If you go, if you click on the franchise index, on
Baseball Reference. Yeah,
you could sort by whatever. Okay. Steals.
There you go. The only other category I saw that was led by a LA Dodger, by the way, was slugging percentage, which was Gary Sheffield.
Right.
But no, yes, you've got the category. Can you name the four?
Okay, so Maury Wills, and I want to say 490.
Jeez, yes, correct. Wasn't expecting to have the numbers for all these, but
okay.
Do you go to bed just reading that franchise list?
Yes. Well, Davey Lopes is there. I don't know if he's two or not. I would say
number
he's two.
Three.
Three. Okay, and then. I don't have his number, sorry. How is he three? Steve Sachs?
Number four.
Hmm.
You're going to kick yourself when you hear
that. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's amazing skill.
Wait, hold on. I am misreading this list. I apologize. You're still going to probably kick yourself. Davey Lopes is two. Steve Stacks is four. I apologize.
Oh.
Text editor was formatting this weird. I apologize.
Okay. So I need the third place guy. Was he here long enough? Sachs. Oh, so I'll just say Brett Butler then.
Willie Davis.
God. Damn. All right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great terrible. Questions.
Great. Really good.
You have trivia? You said you had trivia for me.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sort of.
okay. I'm going to open up a nice drink.
Okay. For a trivia. So this is a very half-assed attempt at trivia. But my... all right. So this trade deadline we had here... so I'm going to ask you between. How do I word this? Between.
Doing it live, folks.
the Dodgers acquired Jeremy Burnitz in 2003.
Yeah.
And they acquired Steve Finley in 2004.
Deadline E, because Burnitz was over the All-Star break, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're roughly deadline. So
yeah, these were the first trades I remember going, aha, I should learn who these players are.
which player of those two had the most home runs for the Dodgers?
Got to be Burnett's.
Okay. For extra points, like how many do you think he had?
As a Dodger?
Both only played the rest of that season for the Dodgers. Yeah, they didn't extend it.
I remember they almost extended Burnett. I feel like that was a thing for a little bit, but maybe not.
Burnett's was in a long line of guys, although he ended up playing the outfield, I guess.
I want to say Jeremy Burnett's had 10 and Finley had like 3 or 4. And I'm going to probably be way off, but
and you reminded you that Finley won the
I know the one I'm thinking of, but so, and I think I was at a game where he had another one, but
now is where I tell you that this whole thing was a sham.
Oh,
because
they both hit one.
No, they both are tied.
Oh,
but at 13.
Wow.
Right.
Wow. And so I do not remember Steve Finley hitting that much more.
Steve Finley hit 36 home runs in 2004 total.
Wow.
Like he had a big year that year.
I guess I remember more doubles, but again, this was very early into my being serious about baseball. So
he hit 12 doubles. And so like he played 58 games. Burnett's played 61 games. Burnett's had 4 doubles. But yeah, Finley drove in 46 runs in 58 games. Like he was a legit. I mean, this was the higher offensive era, but like legit like run producer in the middle of that line. I knew he had a good amount of home runs, but I was honestly shocked when I saw the Burnett's number.
Yeah, I'm the opposite. I actually remember him hitting a lot. I had him in my fantasy league. I remember this now. I'm like, oh, the Dodgers traded for him. Let me add him real quick. Or trade for him, whatever it was at the time. So that's how I was paying attention to that.
So I had always lumped in Burnett's with the Tyler Houston sort of deadline pickup, or like Robin Ventura, who was very much later in his career. I was going to include Robin Ventura in this because he was a deadline thing too, in 2003, and then he stayed around for 2004. He hit 10 total home runs as a Dodger.
At least one of which was a grand slam because he moved up the list. I was at that game. So
he was at, he was. Alex Guerrero hit 11 home runs as a Dodger, not a deadline acquisition, but just point out. But I'm looking at this. There's a lot of guys sitting on 13, so there's 16 guys who hit 13 total home runs as a Dodger. One is Trace Thompson, who's currently, assuming likely going to hit more. But like Fred McGriff is another who played all 2000. Jose Hernandez. Juan Encarnacion, also a deadline acquisition in 2004. Why does it say 2004 here? Like, I thought he played. Whatever. No, they got him before the season and then dealt him in the deal. Oh, wow. I forgot about that. Yeah, what a weird year that was.
that whole, like, 03 to 06 was just kind of. All weird stuff going on.
It was bizarre.
The Jasons. Remember all the Jasons we had?
So many Jasons.
Slightly different spellings.
Now, the other thing I wanted to bring up, it's not this is not trivia at all.
Oh.
Since it's a trade deadline, and I meant to write about this last week, but it was one of those where you kind of got lost to time. But so the Dodgers picked up very lightly regarded Brian Bohannon in 1998 from the Rockies. I guess from the Mets in 98. He later played for the Rockies. But he had pitched mostly in the bullpen for the Mets, but then the Dodgers traded for him. And he made 14 starts for the Dodgers down the stretch. He averaged 6.95 innings per start. Like, how does that happen? Like, he was only 5-7, but he had a 2.40 ERA. Like he was like, can you imagine if they signed someone who did that now? Like, or if they did, like if Rich Hill did that, that would be amazing.
Yeah,
like that's essentially the level he was pitching at. But like for him, his first outing, he gave up. Okay, I'm looking at this now. He had a couple bad. Like, he had one start where he gave up 6 runs, but only one was earned. So, all right, let's let's not go nuts over Bohannon. And then he had another where 6 runs and 3 were earned. So he had some luck there. But man, he was like a workhorse down the stretch. So what a weird year. But that always stuck out to me that Brian Bohannon was like this sort of deadline AC guy almost. But yeah, that's all I got.
Ready for some Twitter questions? And we've got some email questions there for that.
Yeah, let's go for it.
Aaron asks, my only question is, how do I fill the Puig-shaped hole in my heart?
Oh, yeah.
Now, you try to answer this on Twitter itself, but...
I said, fill it with chocolate, obviously.
A Puig, life-sized Puig, like Easter Bunny kind of thing, but exactly, Puig-shaped.
Yeah. No, I mean, like you said, it's...
Also, that is a big heart if you have a... Right, shaped hole. You still got some heart
it's
left.
Like Secretariat, or, yeah. or post Christmas the Grinch. but yeah, it's just one of those things. Like there, you know, you just hope that either the pig figures it out and he's back, or they just move on and don't have whatever the distraction was that made them make this move. So, like, I think that, you know, it could be beneficial for both sides going forward, or it could be like the beginning of like a long, ugly breakup. So we're still in the early stages of this. So you're right to feel whatever, you know, you have to feel, but, I don't know if I have an answer out of that other than actual chocolate.
Todd Munson asks, will Puig be obligated to buy the spread at Oklahoma City, or is that off the quote unquote table since he was demoted?
I like that. Do like that question, but no, I mean, he's not, he's like actual, he's a minor leaguer. Like basically, like he doesn't, people buy spreads for him now. Like, I mean, not really in the sense that he's, but like, what also is weird about that is that the Dodgers, now that they have the sort of the organic meal setup where they have actual, you know, full meals and like not just Costco peanut butter and jelly and bread set up in the clubhouse. Like they have full actual, you know, nutrition planned meals like set up at every level. Like that's less of a thing, although it still happens. Like, you know, like you hear of like the Quakes have had like 10 guys, I think, play for them on rehab assignments this year. And it still happens occasionally. Like I think Ryu bought something. I honestly, I can't remember which one he went. There's like a local rib place that somebody bought in Rancho. But yeah, it still happens because, you know, the players are players and they still like, a variety. I've heard stories like of some of the minor leaguers, they like complain about the organic stuff a little bit. But then I think also it was sort of put to me, like if you took it away for a week, they'd be like, hey, where's our food? So like, but that said, they like a different thing now and again. So yeah, you know, rehabbing player, they'll buy the spread. Puig, not a rehabbing player. So not really a thing.
It changes his mind. And it's late at night on a weekend. May I recommend Bobo's Fried Chicken in Oklahoma City?
Ooh, I have no idea what that place is, but that sounds amazing.
They brine and smoke the chicken, and then bread and fry it. And then they also have fried biscuits and fried catfish. The fried biscuits are basically beignets. They pour, if you don't have to, but you should, when they ask if you want honey, say yes. Pour honey over everything. It's absolutely delicious. So that's my recommendation.
As Ghostbusters taught us, if someone asks if you're a god, you say yes. And if someone asks if you want honey all over it, you say yes.
Yeah. So there you go.
Words to live by.
Byron asks, can you make Puig great again?
I think Puig can make Puig great again.
But we can't. So, we can try. We can encourage him to be great again.
I think it takes a buy-in from him on some level, and then also I'm sure the coaching staff will have their say, and they're going to do whatever they can to, like I said, to either maximize what they have out of him, or he moves on. But I mean, I think for him to be sort of great again, he needs to. you know, he needs to buy into that. He needs to, you know, make it happen. So it's kind of on him.
Tommy Blackjack and his attempt to put this into the explicit category, but it will fail, asks, most likely outcome of the Puig situation, least likely, and throw in a bat guano insane one. Have fun with it. So, I slightly edited that tweet.
For me, I think the most likely at this point is that he gets traded eventually.
You think?
So, like, I don't...
Because I don't know, like, if he can make it through waivers to a team the Dodgers would trade him to.
Right.
Or are they going to buy that low?
But that's the thing, like...
Sell that low, excuse me.
Yeah, you know, you're right. But I mean, they were trying to trade him Monday.
No, I'm sure they would try, but, like, I have to imagine that contract...
It wasn't...
There's a lot of teams that are going to at least try, if not... actually tried for him, at least block.
Yeah, if it was a literal salary dump, that's a lot easier to deal. You know, like, so they're... I don't think that's the case. When I say it's the most likely, that doesn't mean it's like 80%, you know, or whatever. It just means, like, I think that's probably where it's headed, but they may be more likely in the off season.
Let's say tries to go through waivers, team that the Dodgers can't really work with, Bix, that they pull him back. Does he finish the year in the minor? Is he on the... I'm knocking on wood here real quick. Is he on the postseason roster?
I would... If I probably not.
Okay.
But, I mean, that's... Like I said, it's so wide open at this point.
Yeah, we know so little. Like, is the thinking here, like you said, sort of the cold water approach? Hope 2 weeks down there gets them really, you know, humbled and ready to working, or is this really they're just they have moved on? And it's hard to tell. I think it's just speculation at this point. But.
I mean, like I said, he was performing relatively well in the majors, but like if he tears it up for like 2 weeks in Oklahoma City. That doesn't mean like everything is all right again necessarily.
Right.
So I think there is more to it than that. So I don't know if they've moved on from him. So they're just going to ignore whatever he does down there. And it's just like, you're in the minors now. But I don't know. I mean, I would imagine. I think he'd be a September call up, but I mean. I'm just, like I said, I don't know if they're so like frustrated or quote unquote done with him that they would do that, or they would ignore that or whatever. But if it depends how deep this sort of runs, right? If you're sending a message so much to the point where you don't call him up in September, like you're okay, wow, you're really, then I think he's for sure gone. But I don't know, honestly. Like it's so many things. So the bat guano insane thing would be that he's back up next week, and like just redoes 2013 all over again. I mean, I don't know. It's like I said, there's so many avenues this could go, and
we have so little information. I think the pertinent information as to what's going on in the front office's mind.
He literally hasn't reported to Oklahoma City, and it's not on him. It's like he's deep enough into his career where they have to put him on optional waivers. It's like just a dumb procedural thing that baseball has. Nobody ever claims guys on those kind of waivers. It doesn't get you anything. It's like the most unwritten gentleman agreement in baseball, I think, is to not claim guys on optional waivers, because you don't gain anything for it other than like you piss off a team, basically, and everyone tries to do it. So he'll go through those. I think the earliest he could be in Oklahoma City.
Well, maybe that's your bat guano insane one,
or someone claims him and then they figure out something in that regard.
Yeah, there you
but
go.
It's not like a you get him, like it's just you're just blocking him, and it's weird. So. But yeah, so that would be the insane, or that someone claims him and then they trade him, and then re-sign Hector Olivera, who's now who got designated for assignment. Right, and that's another thing. Matt Kemp for Hector Oliveira, for God's
sake. We got a question on that.
Oh, I forgot about that.
We'll get there.
Yeah.
Matthew asks, at what point does Kershaw have to start rehabbing to make it back this season?
Oh, yeah. He's not even throwing right now. We're August 3rd. He's got to be, like, throwing a ball in August, I think. He could probably start up in September, do the simulated game route, and then be back for, like, a couple weeks to get ready for the playoffs. I would say if he's not throwing a ball by the end of August, he's probably done for the year.
So let's hope he throws in the month of August.
Yeah.
Patrick asks, where is Puig? Well, I don't know where he is right now, but I know he listens to this podcast.
For sure.
I hope he does. So come Friday night, he is going to be at Bobo's Fried Chicken.
Yeah. Well, they might have a night game, so maybe he does a day trip there.
No, they're only open at night. They used to only be open from like midnight to 4, if you believe the rumors. And it used to not have a fixed location. You have to figure out where it is. It's a mysterious place.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It has it's a fixed cart now.
Okay.
It's on Martin Luther King Boulevard. I forget the exact address, but it is delicious. Anyways.
Now,
yes.
But also, we probably listening to this episode of the podcast on the flight to Oklahoma City whenever that happens. So.
Yeah, there you go. Adam asks, was Puig sent to Oklahoma City to replace Kevin Durant's roster spot on the Thunder? I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah, I think it's more like the town. The Dodgers, in many ways, they're thinking about, they are part owners of that team and they want to get ingrained with the franchise. The city lost a superstar. So like what they're trying to do is infuse, they're getting the city interested in sports again, reclaiming the town for the Dodgers, the Oklahoma City Dodgers, as it were.
So when your Lakers get Westbrook, it doesn't seem so bad.
Exactly.
They can think the Lakers as their second team.
Yeah, now it's like, well, thank goodness we have the Oklahoma City Dodgers, and they're like this.
You're right.
Beloved,
and they can resolve, the Thunder can be, you know, the AAA affiliate of the Lakers.
Ah, okay, exactly.
There you go. So that's it for Twitter. So let's move on to email. I'm excited for these questions. We got a couple of emails. Somebody forgot to pass the emails along, so we haven't read all the emails. So we're going to catch them all up now.
We're not here to name names.
Yeah. Especially names like Eric. My name... Hello. So this is the email. Hi, my name is Frank, and I'm from Munich, Germany. Sorry if my English is not that good. It's fine. It's better than Eric's.
It's pretty good.
I hope that you can understand me. I listen to the podcast regularly, and I have to thank you for your good work. Thank you. My questions are, there are four. Jock Peterson is, by highlights, and Vin Scully, a real great defender, and deserves to be in the lineup just for that. But the defensive metrics don't back that up. Fangraphs has him as a below-average defender. Is it because the previous center fielders, Ethier and Kemp, were so bad that Jock seems Gold Glove caliber, or are the defensive metrics not just not correct?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's all of that. Like,
yes,
when you go so long with like expecting certain things, like at the end with Kemp in center, it was like anything he had to move for, okay, that ball's dropping, you know, that kind of a thing. Like, which is sad to say, but like that's what it was. And Jock Peterson tracks a lot of stuff down, decent. Good instincts out there. It's tough. The one thing, defensive metrics are so, I'm sure, you know, what teams are using and what's available to the public they're like light years ahead, I think. But it's so tough to like judge on a season's worth of defensive metrics. And it's really hard in a small sample to sort of know what's right. I buy that Jock is probably closer to average, below average maybe, but I think he's probably closer to average or just above defensively in center. But yeah, compared to what Kemp and Ethier were doing out there, he's a lot better. But also there's also the rule that because Vin Scully likes him so much and he says how good of a defensive center fielder he is, that makes it so. So yeah. it's already in the canon. So yeah.
What could a Justin Turner extension look like? Would you re-sign him? And if not, what are the alternatives for next season?
I meant to like do some research on this, and it's probably better for a post later on. I haven't done all the research, but like, yeah, it's.
I'm having a really hard time thinking of a comparable.
Well, he's going to have. It's a good situation for Turner, because he's so hot. Like, if he maintains any of this for the last 2 months, he's going to go into the off season as arguably the top hitter on the market. You know. Or like one of, I haven't looked fully at the market, but I would, it's a weak, very weak free agent market.
I'll see. You keep going. I think there's a list I can look up.
And so he's going to get paid. As far as like an extension, if they wanted to work it out, I mean, you're at this point, you're like, I don't know, someone mentioned, this gets talked about in the comments or something, but someone mentioned like 3 years and $50 million. I don't think that's out of line. Like, you know, like, and given the fact that he's going to be like the top guy in the market, it might even take more years. So it's hard to say that that's going to happen. But you know, if he's gone, I really don't know. They have.
Wow, it is. Yeah. Edwin and Carcion is the only other.
Yeah, and he's like a first base or DH only. And so, you know, that's tough. Is Bautista a free agent as well?
Checking. I don't think so, but maybe. Okay. Oh, he is. I'm sorry. Okay, so these aren't sorted. These are alphabetical. So let me relook at this list. I thought they were sorted by expected value.
Like, it's only Ahire Adrianza, because I'm only in the A's. let's see. You know, Kendrick is an option, but he might be an option at second base with Utley gone, or Kiki Hernandez if they want to play him every day. I can't really see them necessarily doing that.
All right, Cespedes in Carcion, Josh Reddick. Okay.
Yeah, and so maybe it's tough. Like, but Turner's definitely up there in terms.
Absolutely. And then you're getting to Bautista and Mark Trumbo and Dexter Fowler.
Of all those guys, like, Reddick is probably the best defender, but Turner at third is really good. Like,
yeah,
defensively.
Hard position to fill.
Yeah, so like, he's going to be this unique combo of like power and defense, and so he's gonna get paid, man. I don't know if the Dodgers will do it.
Because the Dodgers, their offseason next year is really shaped around who's healthy on the pitchers, who opts out. I have to assume Kesmer is not opting out at this point, but wait until he becomes a World Series star, and you know, then all of a sudden he does.
Sure,
so,
sure, exactly. So he has to. Like, it's been so, like, early in the season, like, no way he's opting out. Then he had that kind of decent run. It's like, okay, he might, but then I don't.
Man, but it's also a very weak starting pitcher in free agent class, too. But it's really going to come down to Turner and Kinley, I think.
Yeah.
And right now...
And I don't discount this, but maybe converting Pedro Baez back to third base.
Or both. Not converting. There you go. He can he's third baseman, 1-8.
Whoa.
And then...
Wait a minute. Wow, 1-8. That's pretty good. So they lose Kenley to, and like, because, you know, he's going to get paid as well.
This is a great question, Frank, but I am going to add Kenley to this. We talked about it real quick. I don't want to spend too much time on it. Sure. This front office does not seem to like committing a lot of money to the relievers. Is Kenley just gone? You have been a pessimist this entire time. I know what I'm asking here, but
I think it's more likely he's not going to resign. But I also think he's the one they have to resign. So like, I talked about it before the season. I thought it should have been done. He's going to be, you know, it's him or Chapman on the market.
I would like the one that's not accused of domestic abuse, please.
Exactly. Or like, and Kenley has as good of a track record as anyone. He has the least amount of mileage at his age as any free agent closer there's ever been. No history of arm trouble whatsoever. He just has, you know, the old pesky heart thing. But no, that, which has also been...
Hopefully he doesn't have a Puig-shaped size.
Surgically repaired as well. So, like, yeah. Yeah.
So maybe that's the answer to Aaron's question then. Surgery. Talk to Kenley's doctor.
Oh, okay. I would say Kenley is the one they absolutely have to re-sign.
So let's say that happens. They re-sign Kenley. Yeah. They don't sign Justin Turner. What's the alternative look like? Because to me, if you have the financial flexibility the Dodgers have, and they've been doing a really good job lowering that number and not really... other than on the international market where they've really been flexing that muscle, I feel like, you know, 50 million 3 years, do it. Like, that to me is just such a...
But like, I think at this point, like, that's like a... If Turner's feeling generous, almost.
I agree on that. But at the same time, the free agent market for hitters hasn't been too crazy. Pitching has been going absolutely insane, but it seems like the hitting market hasn't quite caught up yet. That's probably mostly due to teams seem to be doing a much better job of re-signing their hitters for longer contracts and not letting them hit the free agent market. So you don't have this, you know, superstar that, you know, once Bryce Harper hits the market, things are probably get changed again.
But I know everyone points to that. It's funny, like, everyone says, like, the Phillies are gearing up, the Yankees are gearing up for that after 2018 when, like, Kershaw can opt out. There's, like, Manny Machado. There's all these free agents. I bet you in a year from now, like four of those guys are all going to, like, sign extensions or, you know, or whatever. So it's going to be, like, everyone always thinks this, and then they always nobody factors in that someone could actually sign an extension before then. It always happens.
I think Harbor hits the market, and I have for a while. So
yeah, I could see that.
But the others, I could totally see signing extensions.
Yeah,
certainly one, Clayton Kershaw.
And so the answer though is, I don't know. Like so, certainly Seager is your shortstop. If and Kendrick's going to play one of second or third, I'm assuming. So you just find whatever the best infielder you can find. Who plays second, short, or third, and you just maneuver accordingly. So, like, I don't know, or maybe it's not maybe it's a trade or whatever. Maybe you trade for an awesome defensive shortstop who could also hit, and then maybe you move Seager to third. I know it's unorthodox. I think they would much rather keep him at short, but I'm just thinking out, you know, if that's your best guy who you acquire, maybe that's what they do. But yeah, it leaves them vulnerable. So I don't really know, but I think that's a priority.
You hire Jon Bon Jovi, you re-sign Adrian Beltre, so he's never left. You've got a World Series ring somewhere in the aughts, and then you just re-sign him.
So as we're talking about this, the Drillers just announced this, and the Loons just announced this earlier today. The Dodgers are in re-upping with Minor League Affiliates Day. They have extended the partnership with Class A Great Lakes and then Double A Tulsa through 2018. Great. I mentioned earlier they own the Triple A team. The others are Rancho and Ogden. They're both up at the end of the year, so it's just a matter of...
We've mentioned it before, but you got to come out here. I'm a very short drive from both Tulsa and Oklahoma City.
I agree. I need to visit both parks, and it's sort of on the docket. So
next year, I'll do spring training. We'll do that. It'll be great.
Nice.
Third question. James Bond or Jason Bourne? Remember that he's from Europe. Well, you don't need to be from Europe for me to say James Bond, hands down. Not even close.
James Bond, hands down.
Absolutely hands down.
I think...
You know what I was into before baseball? James Bond. That's what I was into.
I like
James Bond trivia.
I like a lot of James Bond stuff, and he's certainly, like, cool as hell. I kind of like, but man, Jason Bourne's pretty awesome. Like, I would probably, I'd probably still go Bond.
Thank you.
I like that he likes gambling a lot. So, sure, he's
it's not a gamble when he plays. Eric,
true.
When you're baccarat and then later poker, I guess skills are what they are.
It's true that the villains are have been shockingly dumb in some situations where they should have obviously killed him the easiest way possible,
and you they had this elaborate scheme.
Yeah, and but that's but also too that the original Austin Powers, one of the funnier,
one of the best movies,
and so without Bond, those don't exist. That don't exist.
Thank you.
So I'll give extra credit for that, but maybe we just haven't seen the Bourne parodies yet. So
if they're anything like most American parody movies,
oh sorry,
lately they're just not as good anymore.
I like the British Office better.
No,
actually,
no,
it's true.
Just American parody movies haven't been what they used to be, like when Austin Powers was running around. Fourth question, and this was a new email, so we're in a new email now. I just read about the swap of Oliveira and Kemp. Don't you think the Dodgers look like geniuses? They had both back. When you think about what they got back in return for both, wow. Now it's just a swap of bad contracts. Your thoughts? It should be pointed out the Dodgers made both those contracts to begin with. So
yeah, it's kind of funny like how that happens, right? But yeah, that was you know, Oliveira looks worse and worse by the day. The Dodgers certainly. They didn't know about the domestic violence thing came later. He's still under investigation. He could go to prison, actually, for his sort of arrest. He served an 82-game suspension. That's up this week, and the Padres designated him for assignment. That deal for the Padres was all about realizing that Kemp was a sunk cost for them in terms of where they're at on the winning curve or whatever. And so they saved about $30 million of his remaining, you know, They were going to owe him, I think it was, with whatever's left this season, it was about $60 million and going forward. And then now they only owe 30 of that because they basically swapped for that. From the Braves standpoint, they're like on the bottom coming up. They wanted another like slugger who could attract fans or whatever for their new park. And they get Kemp. For essentially, I think it's like $10 million a year, which is you could live with that. Even if you believe the defensive metrics that he's like a negative, you know, he might be replacement level type player even with all the home runs. I think you still live with that if you're the Braves. So that's all that was is.
And he might have value on a trade market at that value to a team in the AL. Should that be a thing they want to pursue later
but
on?
Like so, at the very worst, if you look back at the Oliveira deal, the Dodgers they used their main asset, which was money, to sort of buy, you know, a future
flyer.
Assets.
Yeah.
And so they paid $62.5 million, or they committed that. It was a $28 million signing bonus. They ended up paying him a little bit of salary. So the Dodgers ended up paying about $30 million to have Oliveira, and then they traded him. But they also, it's not like that was for nothing. They ended up, it was that three-team deal. Latos was bad. Wood's been hurt, but also good at times. But you could say he's meh or whatever. But that, if you look at the tree, there's parts of that deal. They got like Jose Peraza in that deal. They used him as part of the deal to get Thompson, Montas, and Micah Johnson from the White Sox. They used Montas as part of the deal to get Reddick and Hill. So like these are things, you know, that are sort of come out of that. So
and the Kemp trade, obviously.
And the Kemp trade, they got like one of the best hitting catchers in the National League, and Yasmani Grandal, who has, as we were saying this, he had another home run last night and right-handed. He has 10 home runs in his last 23 games, and it's the most in baseball since June 30th. He was second in July in OPS in the majors and WOBA to Joey Votto, so he's healthy and swinging. And he's doing well. So, both of those trades worked out for the Dodgers. It was just sort of funny to see two Dodgers contracts being swapped by other teams.
Yeah.
Very, very surreal day when that broke.
And that is it from Frank. Thank you, Frank. All great questions.
Yeah, those were outstanding. Thank you, Frank.
Finishing up Craig's email. Two questions. We'll get through these quick. We're running on time here. When you go to the movies, where do you prefer to sit and why? Depends on the theater, but assuming they've got proper stadium seating and assigned seating and I get a pick, you know, like not the front two rows. So after the break, you know, you got that little break down in the middle, somewhere, you know, middle center.
Yeah.
Back center works too.
I'm kind of that way. I don't know if it's because I'm lazy. It's probably factored in a lot, but I'm a big first row of the back guy. So like right in front of the break, basically.
Sure.
I do like putting my feet up on the rail a little bit. That's probably a little...
and that depends on the layout, because sometimes you don't have that.
Yeah, and I'm kind of open. I mean, stadium self-seating, it's really hard to have a bad seat unless you're literally in the very front and you're like craning your neck. So it's those. That's generally where I like to sit. I think first row and towards the middle for me.
Eventually, you are going to get your own Alamo Draft House. Originally in Austin, Kansas City got the second one. The best theater experience you can ask for. So
is it just because of the food and beer aspect?
It's a combination of they bring your food and beer to you. But at least in Kansas City, I'm not sure if they're going to have to adjust their ticket price for the downtown real estate. Tickets are very cheap, not cheap, but affordable.
Sure.
Like, $7 to $9.
Oh, wow.
As opposed to the 15s. And they run it how you would run a movie theater. As an example, I saw the new Star Trek a couple of weeks ago, and during the, before the show started, instead of just showing you, kind of crappy advertisements, they were showing YouTube clips of bizarre Star Trek stuff. Funnier videos, during Star Wars, they played bits of the, holiday special. They were showing bits of like old commercials, old Star Wars or Star Trek.
Did they show the SNL clip with William Shatner at a Star Trek convention?
They didn't show that, but that is the kind of thing they would show.
That's amazing. Okay. What you're saying is they care.
Yeah, and they run. I've always said is they run a theater how you would run a theater, and they almost every day they have like a special screening, like an old movie that they've picked up and curated and put up there. So I saw like Back to the Future Part 2 on Back to Future Day. I've seen The Breakfast Club there. I've seen Monty Python, The Holy Grail there. And they're doing something fun every day.
That's kind of cool.
So there you go. And the final question, and it's an important question. Is there any reason to cook and eat skinless chicken parts?
Wait. Yeah.
Well, so it's healthier in that. It can be healthier. If you need to get your protein count higher and your fat count down lower, it's good for that. But other than that, skin is where all the flavor is. It's much cheaper to buy skin on bone in.
Yeah. I would say for me, like, I always wait for sales, and the vast majority of my chicken purchasing is boneless, skinless, either breast or thighs.
I would recommend you finding a good butcher and trying some skin on stuff. I think you'll find the flavor is much higher. Mm-hmm. But the reason is both laziness and health reasons. To people who default like you do on that, I recommend, trying to branch out a little bit. You'll get a lot more flavor that way.
I don't want branches in my chicken. What are you talking about?
Very good. Well, that's it for this week. Next week, Yasiel Puig will play Where in the World is Yasiel Puig?
Exactly.
Gumshoes.
And hopefully, they won't have Clayton Kershaw on the minor, but that actually would be a good thing for next week because it means he's pitching again. They're like getting on the rehab trail, but I was going to make a flippant comment, but I don't really have it. So, maybe send me to the minors for next week.
There you go. Get some reps in.
But thanks for listening, everybody. We will talk to you next week.